Today, March 8th, is International Women's Day, which, according to the website, is a global day dedicated to celebrating the social, economic, cultural, and political achievements of women, raising awareness about women's equality, lobbying for accelerated gender parity, and fundraising for female-focused charities. Wow, it's a big day, y'all. I've had so many conversations about whether or not it's actually beneficial to have days and months dedicated to specific people groups, such as, you know, Black History Month or Indigenous Peoples Day. And it's not ideal that people seemingly only have conversations around certain issues during those days or months, and the rest of the year is implicitly for the majority to be let off the hook. However, without days like International Women's Day or months like Women's History Month, we may not be having these conversations or supporting these causes at all. Unfortunate, yes, but true. So take this day as you will, but I am proud to be a woman and to acknowledge the contributions of the women who came before me and to support organizations that are committed to making actionable changes in their communities. That said, please check out the show notes for a list of women-focused organizations that you can donate to or support in the long term. And if you can, take some time to learn about a figure who greatly impacted the trajectory and position of women in society today. There are so many incredible women out there, you know, past and present, including Sarah. Great segue. In the last episode, we learned that Sarah was only educated up until she was 13 or 14 years old, and this means that she never had any exposure to what we call higher education, and she wasn't too happy about that, understandably. Now, I know I left you on a cliffhanger last episode, and we'll get into what Sarah did after she realized that she wouldn't be able to go to school. But before that, I want to take a brief moment to talk about a key part of the education system back then.
English, tango izidza from grade one.
Sarah says they began learning English in grade one, which was in about 1954 for her. Again, the justification for European colonization was that we Africans were uncivilized, incompetent, and unintelligent. So of course, the British had to teach us English. After all, it was their world and we were just living in it. Although Sarah's English isn't perfect now, which it absolutely does not have to be, she knew back then and she knows now enough to get by when needed. And you'll hear that when she speaks, she sometimes interjects English words here and there, either because there's no Shan equivalent or because the English is more commonly spoken. Furthermore, in school, the girls were taught how to knit and sew and etc., which the women in Sarah's village were already doing.
Mechisona embroidery ni kuita nemaoko filling ye mechitini mechikrosha mechipanana mapeteni nekuti zvinenge zvimwe zvabva kuchikoro muri kuchikoro munomboita ningika kunzi cheka hembe.
On the other hand, the boys did carpentry and woodwork. Sexist much? Absolutely. Anyway, enough of the sidebar. Let's get back to Sarah. Freddie, Sarah's dad, used to supply maize, which we call chibage and shana, and mealy meal, natively called hufu, to white farmers. And one day, one of the white farmers told Freddie that he needed a young girl to help rear or take care of his child. When Freddie approached Sarah with the proposition, she immediately jumped at the opportunity, fed up with not being able to go to school and hoping that she could eventually go. So, in about 1960, she left her entire family and village to work as a live-in nanny for a white family in Nyazura, taking care of a child of about 5 years old. Let's call her ex. Meanwhile, black natives were becoming ever more restless and began protesting white colonial rule. But life went on, and somewhere in eastern Zimbabwe, a young teenage girl left behind familiarity to make a living. She never returned to school, and the money she made, she used some of it to support her male siblings. How ironic. That was the beginning of her breadwinning. Again, on the farm, Sarah was constrained to menial tasks, but at least she was earning a living from doing this work. She would wake up, give X a bath, and then do chores in her quarters. While X's father was out on the farm, the other workers who handled the rest of the house, who were male, would cook X's food and Sarah would feed her. It was just Sarah and X in those days, since X's mom also went to work at a pharmacy in Rusape. I wonder how Sarah felt in those days. After all, she was just a child. Maybe lonely, or maybe excited to be doing something with her life since school wasn't in the cards. Or maybe she was scared to be in the presence of the white man. Perhaps she was just okay. Whether she was lonely, excited, or afraid, being the busybody that she was, Sarah would spend the day crocheting and knitting while looking after and playing with X. I also wonder how it felt to be in charge of caring for a white child at that time. When X's mom returned from work one day, she saw what Sarah had created and was unsurprisingly impressed. X's mom asked Sarah if she could sell some of her creations, and Sarah gladly obliged. She stayed on with the white family for a while, even moving with them to Rusape, a neighboring town, traveling a little further from her family, who she was only able to see during off days. I want to stop right here and acknowledge something before we continue. You may have caught the word Ruzeva, which sounds like reserve, in the clip you just heard of Sarah speaking. Well,
in on the reserved area, nzvimbo yakaseverwa vanhu. Ino isusu tinobata isareduka kuti Ruzeva.
Ruzeva is actually a Shona iteration of reserved area.
Nzvimbo iyoyi haisiri yako. Inzvimbo yakangosevwa. Saka vaiti vakasvika pane vanhu vakanga vauda kuisa mapurazi voti vanhubvai kunoku. Vanhu vanga vachiti tine nzvimbo yedu kakureseva kwedu. Aiwa, ireserved.
Sarah explains that back then, if you lived on a piece of land that was a reserved area and the government wanted to build something on it or use it in any way, you would be asked to leave. Land partition in colonial Zimbabwe was such that indigenous Africans were allocated unproductive farming land, while the white colonialists gave themselves a disproportionate amount of land that was highly fertile and conducive to agriculture. So even though an African family lived on a piece of land and maybe had been there for a while, they would have easily been kicked off the property if the government wanted to use the land for some reason, or if a mine had been found on it. This little bit of information is not only very significant in understanding the country in which Sarah grew up in and the circumstances within which she was raised, But it's also significant when placed side by side with Sarah's later achievements, so keep that info in mind. Eventually, the White family, who were originally from the recently liberated South Africa, returned to their home country, and Sarah had to find work elsewhere. When she got married, she began to think about what work she could do. That's when she remembered her crocheting, knitting, and sewing skills. Although she had never had a long-term formal education, Sarah had picked up many skills that equipped her with the tools she needed to make a living. She made her first move by going into town to look for work. When she came across a white woman who was very impressed with her handiwork, but suggested that Sarah get a machine to make it better and easier. With the help of her husband, she bought a sewing machine and read a lot of books to learn how to use it. Around the same time, the country was at war. Between 1964 and 1979, the indigenous people, after a steady rise in African nationalism, fought the white colonialists for freedom from British rule. This war was known as the Second Chimurenga among locals, or the Rhodesian Bush War to the white colonialists. More commonly, it's simply known as the War of Liberation. Although this conflict may have taken place a little far from home, the effects reached Sarah personally as she lost one of her brothers during the war. But as always, life went on. Once Sarah had taught herself how to use the machine with the help of her husband and other community members, she returned to the white woman who had suggested she learn how to sew. Sarah told the woman about her newly acquired skill, so the woman placed an order for a couple of jerseys. But that's not the end of the story. You've been listening to the second part of Sarah, a three-part series about an ordinary woman who defied the odds through hard work, faith, and Coca-Cola. In next week's episode, the last in the series, Sarah takes her business to the next level during Zimbabwe's early days, and we get to know her in the present days. This podcast is written, hosted, and produced by me. Thanks for tuning in. Happy International Women's Day, and take care.